listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, October 4th already. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. It's always good to be here, and I'm very excited about tonight.
So good to have you. I'm excited about tonight as well. I can't wait to get into it. And we welcome those joining us live. We appreciate your contributions. We appreciate talking with you in chat. And thanks to those that catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So for tonight, our topic, the confidence to explore the unknown, lessons from cryptozoology. And we have a special guest with us, Tabitha Hines. Welcome.
Hi, thanks. Welcome. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, we're so excited to have you, and I'm really looking forward to this discussion tonight. I know we kind of batted around a few ideas. You're going through quite a few different subjects, and you're in the Metaphysics Institute or Thomas Francis courses right now?
I'm in Thomas Francis.
Very cool, very cool. So what was it about tonight's topic that kind of got you interested?
This is absolutely one of my favorite topics is cryptids and cryptozoology. I have found it one of the most fascinating studies I've ever done. I've always been fascinated with fairy tales and mythology, and cryptozoology kind of brings it into, I think, like modern day mythology, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. And I think that's kind of part of the debate, is it? What part of it is mythology and what part of it is reality, if you can.
Well, and I think that's the biggest thing is I've noticed, especially like in a lot of the studies that I've done, I noticed that there's like 2 branches of cryptozoology. And one branch is very the scientific. It wants to be rooted in finding the hidden animals. It wants scientific proof. They want to be validated by, you know, they want to be validated by the scientific community as being able to find these creatures. And the biggest ones we know that they're trying to get validation on are like the Loch Ness Monster and Bigfoot, you know, or, you know, Yowie or a Ring Ping Deck, you know, the Yeti, you know, all his fun names that he has. And they want validation from the science side as being, you know, cryptozoology should be taken serious by the scientific community. And I have a tendency to kind of go on to the second branch, which is more the metaphysical side of it's more of a spiritual experience, and not everyone gets it. And not like I love all the creatures that people have claimed to see, from like, you know, the Jersey Devil, the Mothman, Wendigos, you know, like that whole huge range of cryptids, rather than just the ones they're so adamantly trying to prove, if that makes sense.
I like the metaphysical side.
See, and one of my favorite documentaries is, anyone who's interested in Bigfoot, I recommend the documentary of, it's called Flash of Beauty, Bigfoot Revealed. And it's a documentary and it goes into how people who have seen Bigfoot actually see it as more of a spiritual experience. Like they were meant to be there. They were at a time in their life when they were supposed to be at that point, you know, and it's really interesting. One of my favorite interviews is with a hypnotist and he goes, he said that he had, even when he had a memory regression of a guy who'd seen one, the guy just starts crying because he knew he would never get to see one again, you know? So to him, it was such that spiritual experience. And I like that, you know, like when people have that and whether you're skeptical of it or whether you want to believe in it, I think the same thing of like ghosts and spirits, that even some people, when you tell them, sorry, I don't think your house is haunted, I don't think your dad is here, they refuse to believe you. You know, they'll go, no, my dad's here, I feel him, you know? And so like, I think that that's the same thing in the cryptid world, is especially like Native American culture. Bigfoot is a huge part of the Native American culture. Mm-hmm. And I remember seeing an interview with a Native American girl who went off to college, who left her tribe to go to college. And for the first time, she met someone who didn't believe in Bigfoot, and she didn't understand that. She's like, I've never met anyone who doesn't believe in him. And I thought that was such a reverse side to I guess like seeing it from a different perspective of someone who it's so in tuned into their culture that to meet someone who didn't believe was phenomenal, if that, you know?
Yeah. I think it's indicative of kind of the cultures that you grew up in. Absolutely. And, you know, that makes me think about a lot of the things that Dr. Vicky, you've talked about when it comes to Indigenous First Nations people and their deep spiritual relationship with a lot of these things, Sasquatch being one, and I know
giants.
That. Yeah.
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 Yeah, of course. Kind of like that's a normal in Indigenous communities. Of course they exist, but they believe that they live between the worlds. So lending to what you're saying, Tabitha, is that Bigfoot, Sasquatch lives between the worlds. And it can go into another dimension. That's how it's always been explained to me, you know, in all of my lifetime. But
it could be. And I think that people who want it to be the people who want it to be like scientific proof, they want the proof of it. They want to show that it's out there. I think, honestly, I think it's that because they're so avid about it, they have a fear of like us being the only intelligent life on this planet, you know what I mean? Rather than seeing it as a spiritual experience. And I think that that's their fear, is they want it to be taken serious and for people to hunt this thing down, where I kind of see it as, well, but it's someone else's experience, you know, like that's it. To some people, it is a spiritual experience, and you would take that away because they didn't get a photograph, because they didn't cast the footprints. You would take that away from them, you know, as being a hoax, you know, like, no, that's their experience.
Well, true.
Yeah. But I think science, let's be fair though. Science needs something repeatable. And that's the difference between an emotional experience or spiritual experience versus that repeatable science. So, mm-hmm. I say in my mind, I say, fair enough. You need something repeatable. I don't. But again, the science part, looking for the repeatable, you know.
Well, and that's, you know, that's one thing is, you know, I think that for people that have the experience, just like Tabitha, you said, these are deeply personal spiritual experiences for them. It's not a deeply personal experience for me because I didn't experience it. And I, depending on the person and depending on, you know, the character, I'll reserve the right to choose whether or not to believe the tale, but my belief has no bearing on them and their personal experience and their story. But at the same time, you know, I wouldn't mind some proof. You know, I wouldn't mind some definitive thing to point to. And I will admit that, you know, in my mind, the jury is still out, but I don't disbelieve any more than I do believe.
I think something, give you a couple of examples off the top of my head. Very many years ago, decades, I saw in my mind's eye a bird in a tree. And again, it was northern Alberta. And I saw this bird several times, and I told some Indigenous friends of mine, and they say, yes, the birds are appearing from between the worlds. And I swear, as clear as I could see any other bird, I saw this bird. Well, years later, thankfully with the internet, I found out it's the Putu bird. It's exactly what I described to people. Yep. This Putu bird, and they consider it a spiritual bird, by the way, if you look it up, P-O-O-T-O-O. And I said, oh, you know, it's like part owl, part hawk, part something. And then, like I say, a few years back, I came across, I went, that's the bird I saw. So one of the things that's very common to hear in Indigenous communities is that as some animals go extinct in our reality, three-dimensional, others from other dimensions come forward to maintain the balance of nature. And I go, wow, you know, that's quite the thought, that there's this shifting of energies. And again, in the metaphysical world, that's possible. You know, absolutely possible. There's been... Yeah,
and I have to agree with you, Vicky, on that, because we're just four-dimensional beings. Yeah. So I kind of tell people, think of it, if you lived in a 2D world, you would not understand what a sphere was. You would get what a circle was, but you wouldn't understand what a sphere was. Yeah. And you have to think about it the same way. We only perceive our universe in four dimensions. So I have to agree with you on that, that absolutely it could be something we don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know, as I know I've said in previous programs, I know many people who claim to have seen a Sasquatch. And a medicine man, the late medicine man, who's now crossed over, would tell me that there are three kinds of Sasquatch. One is a meat eater, you know, one is totally vegetarian, and the other is from a different part of the world, you know, so that they have distinguished that not only is there such a thing as a Sasquatch or a Bigfoot, but different kinds. So you would think that, you know, Yeti would eat different kinds of food, you know, as opposed to what's in North America. So they would be very cautious about the meat eaters, you know, because they're more aggressive and they live in certain parts. And so these are very common stories. Another very common story is about the giants. And again, this is my psychic spiritual experience, again, decades ago, telling my Indigenous friends, family, that I swear this is giant following me. And they said, oh, that's good magic. What do you mean that's good magic? It means he likes you and taking care of you. And so I'd always see this very tall being, you know, and he would hang around with me. And this went on for years. Now, when I moved to British Columbia as opposed to Alberta, I asked the giant, do you want to come with me? And he said, no, it's not my territory. So that's when I lost contact with that spiritual giant. This is before I knew anything about the giants of North America. And again, people can look that up because, you know, there were giants, you know, 7, 8, 12 feet tall. And now the big trend, of course, is if you buy your 12-foot, you know, kind of skeleton for Halloween, which is pretty fun in a way. But so this is... Again, a different reality of, you know, what we're looking at. I have a question before I get too sidetracked here for you, Tabitha. When you were taking the course at TFU, which is Dr. Kelly's course, what were, let's say, the three big takeaways that you got from the course material?
So, gosh, there's so much. I love the Thomas Francis University. I think it's filled with information you could need. And I think the biggest ones are the field research. You know, he goes very into interviewing, how to watch for hoaxing, facing skeptics. And I think that that was one of the biggest ones and the hardest ones, is like realizing that it's actually not even skeptics. Skeptics are usually the ones, and I love that he defines the difference between a skeptic and a non-believer, because there is a true difference. A skeptic is someone who just isn't sure. They're just not, they just haven't had the experience. I would actually classify myself as a skeptic. I haven't had the experience. I love the stories. I love, but I've never had an actual experience of running into like a cryptid myself. And so like, I would say absolutely I'm a wannabe believer, but because I haven't had that, I can't say.
Oh, I think we lost you there, Tabitha.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, we got you.
Okay. yeah, so I would classify myself in the skeptic and not the non-believers. And I think that a lot of times when you're faced with non-believers and people are like, Bigfoot doesn't exist, like absolutely puts their foot down on it. Honestly, I think it's a fear. Like they have a very strict belief system and they're rigid and they can't let go of that control. And I think that that was one thing like he brought up in like the material, is that you have to realize that it is fear, and you almost have to feel sorry for them that they're so rigid in their beliefs that they wouldn't even allow someone else's experience to be a story told to them. Like they wouldn't even allow someone else to have that experience. Like it has to be my way, you know? Right. And so
that's pretty typical of people though, you know, everyone.
It is. And a lot of things
live in their own belief systems.
And that's a really good point,
and
because
we all have it.
With strict materialists, you have almost the same devout kind of belief as you do with devout religious believers. And speaking of this, it makes me think of a discussion I was having online. Somebody had basically posited that fundamentalist Christianity is the only thing that society should allow because it's the truth and da-da-da. And, of course, I made my argument that I believed that Sasquatch was our Lord and Savior. That's why he keeps checking in on people. But I think that it's important to keep an open mind. I think it's important to be open to what the truth can be, because if you think that you know the truth already, but you're basing that off of faith in the materialist or faith in the spiritual, you might be blind to the truth when it presents itself. And like you said, Tabitha, I would also consider myself a skeptic in that regard. Not so much that I don't actively disbelieve, but I haven't had the personal experience. You know, it makes me think often of Thomas Paine. He wrote The Age of Reason, and in it he was talking about, you know, the religious faiths of the time, and that, you know, he's not being asked to have faith in God. He's being asked to have faith in what a human being is saying, because he did not have the revelation. He did not have the spiritual encounter. But at the same, you know, I won't discount it for other people, and I will say that there are compelling arguments to be made for it. There are compelling stories, the accounts, is a better way of putting it. So
I guess
it's
more about who's believable. You know, that's all. If you like somebody and you trust them, you're going to believe them. So
yeah,
that's
true.
The way that goes.
And
you know,
well, and they've actually shown in psychological studies, like the higher your IQ is, the actually more open-minded you are. So like, it's actually was interesting. So your primitive brain, and a lot of people know this, I mean, everyone does it. The
You're
moment
talking about my
that
primitive
you
brain?
See something. Yeah, like everyone's, they have a lizard brain. We all have a lizard brain. And that little lizard brain has no intelligence. It's basically telling you how to survive. So everything you see, including a person who walks into a room, you instantly put judgments onto them. You put your stereotypes onto them. You put your history and all that stuff onto them. You do. It's our natural instinct to survive. It takes an intelligent person to use now your upper mind to get past those stereotypes and use an intelligence to see that person as not as being different. And so like we instantly do that. It is a survival instinct. And it's the same thing, I think, for beliefs and those who are unwilling to change or even be open-minded to a different belief. You know, like, I love doing, I love studying religion. I love studying, obviously, cryptozoology, UFOlogy. I love all this stuff. Just love it. And I think that it takes an open-minded person to, like, want to keep going and keep studying and keep learning. I think that when you stop growing, I think that that's when your belief system starts becoming more rigid. You start getting stuck. And I think that that's why I want to be a lifelong learner. I love stories. I love hearing stories. I love being in these classes. I mean, this university has changed me. So
what other, if you don't mind me asking, what other points would you share with people of what you gleaned from the course material?
I think that one of the biggest things I've learned is that I believe, and this is mine, is I think the traditional scientific methods that we have been doing have been taken over so much by rigid beliefs that the scientific community isn't open to spiritual experiences, if that makes sense, because it's not repeatable. But so I think we are spiritual beings.
So Dr. Kelly mentioned that in the course material?
He does. He actually goes into, he has one of the courses that he goes into is facing skeptics and and going into the rigid beliefs of don't get stuck into believing the scientific community because they don't even know what consciousness is. Like, there's no scientific proof of consciousness.
Right.
And he's right. There's not. There isn't. And so that's one of the reasons I went, you're right, our scientific is kind of run by, and this is, totally incorrect, but it's run by a good old boys club, which is if it doesn't fit into our world, then you're going to throw it out. Because one of the things I feel really bad for this girl. She was studying, she actually grew up raising bees and honey, and gathering their honey. She would watch the bees and realized that they danced with each other and that's how they were communicating with one another. And one day she was sitting there and she was listening in on a string theory and she was looking at the pattern of the string theory and she realized that bees move in a different, in almost six dimensions, not just our four. And that's how they communicate with each other. That bees actually can see two more dimensions or perceive two more dimensions than we can. And so she went, because she was so excited about this, she actually went to her professor to go, I would love to do a study if bees can actually communicate and see into different dimensions. And he told her, if you go into multidimensional work, no one will ever take you serious in the scientific community at all. Mm-hmm. And I felt so bad for her that she saw that she actually dropped the study because she wanted to be taken seriously. And I feel like that was knowledge and information that was being thrown away because of these rigid beliefs. If that makes sense.
I think it's it makes me think also of any kind of notion that there was intelligent life outside of Earth in the older science community from many decades past. How, even to think that alien life existed far elsewhere that we haven't contacted, it was, ridiculous. Of course, that's changed now, but it's indicative of the fact that, just like I was saying earlier, when it comes to just, your religion, you're not taking it on, you're not refusing to have belief in God because of what God says, you're refusing to have belief in what a human says. It's important to remember that the science community is made up of humans. And humans are fallible. Humans are arrogant. I think that tribalism comes into it. When it comes to belief systems, often people try to fit other people into their belief system as a, it's an old thing with human society where we look at people that think and act like us as part of our tribe, and people that don't as others. And that creates a bias in and of itself. So people that jump to say that it's absolutely impossible for Bigfoot or Sasquatch or Yetis to exist, they're not only, you know, exuding arrogance, they're also using their signaling their tribe. They're signaling their, you know, bias in that way.
Yes. And you know what? They might be right. Perhaps it isn't a part of this realm. Perhaps Bigfoot are not, and it is a metaphysical. It could be a metaphysical experience and not meant for actual rigid science to understand. Like, same thing for ghosts and even in here, it was Dr. Zach, he had just pointed out that air pilots, whenever they saw UFOs, were not allowed to discuss it. And I absolutely believe that that's true, that we have a tendency to people know something that we don't, and we're not supposed to talk about it. So let's say the government does know about the extra dimensions, and these are all extra dimensional beings, because I've heard many people refer to them that way, even UFOs, and that because of that, if we do, the government knows that, you know, if you listen to some conspiracy theorists, we're an experiment. You know, we're basically being studied because we can only see in those four dimensions. They find us fascinating, you know?
Yeah.
And so
I actually had that discussion not long ago with somebody about we're all a medical experiment and all humans on Earth are a medical experiment. You think about pharmaceutical companies and stuff. They went, huh, I never thought about it that way. I said, well, everybody is. You take medication for anything and you're an experiment because they don't know if it's going to work. And, you know, we live to be 90, 100 years old, well, because of medication. If it wasn't for medication, most people wouldn't live that long. So it's an experiment. We'll see what works and what doesn't work. And I think that that's where we have to understand. I know it's been brought up in the chat because there's a lot of chatter in here, people, about, you know, what's science, what's not science, and pseudoscience versus others. And again, how we perceive a reality and the reality that we're told to believe. And I think the same thing, and I'm not meaning to go off on a tangent here, people, but if you're born into a certain reality in a certain country, a certain state or a certain province, you take on that identity and you believe that that identity is real. My view is that we're free sovereign beings of the universe who happen to land in that part of the world, which is a very different view. Because when people say, oh, you know, raising their flags, I'm Canadian, I'm American, I'm whatever, that's only how you identify. It's not who you are as a free sovereign being of the planet, you know, of the universe. So it, again, it's how we view our reality. I know Dr. Mike has just said more and more well-known scientists have an open mind to paranormal events. And I agree with that. I think they do. They just don't talk about it. And I'd like to bring up the fact that my late teacher friend back in the 50s and 60s took paranormal studies in a matter of basic psychology courses. And then that was all moved in the late 60s, early 70s to McGill University, you know, to there's other place in California. And basically they took it out of common study, regular study, and said, no, we're not going to study things like telepathy, psychic phenomenon, or any of those things. But that was his early education in psychology when he got his master's. And he went on to study hypnosis, states of mind, etc. But it was a shame for him when they took out those aspects in, you know, university level psychology courses. So it's whatever they do or don't want you to know about today can explore. And I know that sounds so conspiracy theorist, and I'm not meaning to. I'm just saying that that's kind of fact.
Perhaps I would point I also often try to point out when I have discussions when it comes to conspiracies and a group trying to control people, I don't know that they know the truth. I think it's more of that base instinct to, you know, yes, control what people are looking into and things like that, but it's based on, again, the tribalism, and sometimes it's, you know, it's also the pendulum swinging. You know, you were talking about this being more prevalent in the long, long ago, you know, the 50s and 60s, and I think that it could be swinging back, and I think that there, you know, it's a good thing to remember the importance of being grounded too. I think we need to have an open mind, but don't let your brain fall out. I think the fact that, I don't know if anybody had been familiar with the conspiracy regarding 5G, and in the United States, we had a test of the emergency broadcast system. A lot of people had their phones go off, and of course, it was a big conspiracy that when this was done, it was going to activate the different plagues within the vaccines that people have gotten. We were all going to turn into zombies. I mean, I don't feel particularly more zombie-ish than when that alert went off about 2:30-ish, but I mean,
some of that's just, these are silly, kind of silly speculations that people want to talk about. It just gets silly.
It does.
At some point.
It is. And I'm not going to lie. I'm a conspiracy theorist. I totally love following conspiracies, but I follow them only to a point where, okay, now it's not, I can't believe it. Like mine, one of the biggest things is follow the money. If you can follow someone who's going to get power or money out of it, absolutely. Yes. I will go with you on that conspiracy.
I often find
that road with you.
I think that you cannot judge every conspiracy, you know, the same. I think they're not all created equal. Some are very compelling and interesting. Some are
absolutely
out there. I particularly, you know, scoff at the flat Earth conspiracy and the idea of an ice wall and then these greater lands outside of the ice wall and da da da.
What? The Earth isn't flat, Michael. Come on.
I know. But
you're ruining the belief system.
And, you know, you look at it and you scoff because, of course, it's ridiculous. But, you know, also, it's and that's kind of the balance, right? You have on one side of the spectrum, you have people that, well, only what we can see, touch, and feel is real. And on the other side, well, anything we want to believe is real if it makes us if it sounds interesting and it's a good YouTube video. I think that we need to have a bit of a middle ground where we can be open to things and be open to experiences while at the same time, just like you said, Tabitha, you know, you want to be a believer, but you haven't had the experience yet. Same boat I'm in. And we have to just keep our mind open to the truth, but not assume that we know the truth.
Well, I wanted to go back to Dr. Edwards' comment. He had said that the entire field of metaphysical science is considered pseudoscience, but the disbelievers fail to realize that all science is based on, you know, priority concepts and theories anyway. And I wanted to point that out. I think that that's why I wanted to call this the confidence to explore the unknown, is to know that you will get criticism. You will have non-believers in your field of study. It comes, unfortunately, with the metaphysical field. You know, if you're in this, you're going to have non-believers come at you no matter what. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you're a spiritual healer, if you're doing it in ufology, if you're doing it in parapsychology, if you're doing it in the, there's so many holistic degrees in this, and no matter what, people will come at you and call it witchcraft. They'll tell you that none of it works, you know, and I guess that's what I wanted from this, is to like let you guys know that you're not alone. Like, that's what this is for. You are here to build up teams and know that you're not alone. Like, I know especially COVID made us feel that way. We got locked in, and now you sit in the internet and you start seeing all this skepticism, and people are evil on the internet. They just, all of their filters fly out the window. And that's the thing, is I wanted to give people, especially in this, because you guys know me, I'm all about self-healing and building up your self-confidence. And that's what this is about, is like, even me in going into cryptozoology, which is one of the ones that is constantly attacked by the scientific community, and going, but to me, that's okay. I don't think I wouldn't be making an impact if I wasn't being attacked. If that, you know, like you don't, you, if you're in this field and you don't want to make waves, you're in the wrong field. Yeah. You know, like you want people to question you. You otherwise you're not having an impact. Obviously you're making a wave if someone's coming back at you and saying, that's not true. You know, well, right. Clearly you hit something.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you have to be provocative. You have to push people outside their comfort zone. That's going to invite some blowback from time to time.
Yeah. Yeah. And like Zoran, I probably butchered your name. I'm so sorry. But Zoran, he pointed out non-repeatable is not a valid scientific argument. Otherwise, you can cancel out all social sciences, branches of natural science, because you can't repeat an element of evolutionary psychology. And you're absolutely right. I have a master's degree in psychology, as well as me currently. I actually just got my master's in the cryptozoology, and ufology. So I just got it.
Congratulations.
But, thank you. I'm very excited. But it's true though that in psychology, you cannot, not every autistic person reacts the same. Not mm-hmm. every bipolar person acts the same. They have, so you, what we call umbrellas, and you fall under the umbrella of bipolar, the umbrella of autism, you know, so you are matching certain, like what they call like symptoms or personality traits that go along with those, but you are not, and behavioral stuff and neurological, but you are not, that no person is the same. And you're right, it's non-repeatable. You cannot repeat one autistic trait into another person. You can't mm-hmm. do it. And so it's, again, and I think the same thing for solar flares and weather phenomenons. You cannot repeat it, but we know it exists. You know, you can't repeat it, but you know that it happens, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, I think there's so much about the world that is in a constant state of change that when, you know, I vaguely recall, so I beg people to not just take my word on it and check into it. But I recall a peculiar phenomena where if you have done a study and it seems, you know, well-founded study that shows a particular thing to be true over time, it's almost like, you know, just things change and that becomes less and less true over time with new studies and, you know, again, trying to repeat the same thing over and over because we are in a constant state of flux too. I will also give the scientific community some credit in that it's more flexible and it does change, even though it might be over generations. It tends to be more flexible than, you know, some of the, you know, religious believers and the doctrines and things like that that demand things to be much more static. The very fact that there are people that are open to more things that could be defined as the paranormal. It's the fact that in the scientific community, it's gone from being a laughable thing to consider life outside of Earth to a near certainty. You know, I don't think you could find a scientist now that would argue against their life being life in the universe other than us.
I think if we have a wider mind, we have to look at, again, it's called critical thinking, everybody. When I started school in 1960, it was a given that China owned Tibet. What I didn't know until I was older is in the fact that China took over Tibet in the few years before they redid all the social studies texts, you know? And I think now they come up with names of countries and things in the news that I go, I have no idea where that country is.
Newfoundland, that's not a real place.
I know, that's true. Not Newfoundland, don't pick on Newfoundland. I don't know what that is. So things have changed radically. And if we don't keep that open mind to how that's changed, why that's changed, and understanding that there's more going on than just what we see or think, then we're in trouble. You know, we have to keep that open learning mind, as you said earlier, Tabitha, to keep growing and learning and adjusting. That's not an easy task for most people. It's really not. It's a tough thing for most people to stay on top when they've got their daily lives to go through. You know, it's like, why would I think about a Sasquatch when I'm just trying to pay my bills this month? You know, why would I look at what country is evacuating where to why? I'm just trying to get food on the table. So in defense of most of the population, it's a very tough thing to stay in multiple realities, to stay open-minded. You know, if you're hungry and homeless, you're not thinking spirituality. You're just thinking getting some food and staying warm. And
that's the Maslow's
hierarchy.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you have all your needs met, then you have more opportunity to keep an open mind. And I think that we're in a time right now where suppression is a very real thing, you know, and as Michael and I were talking before the program, with homelessness, this was going on back in the 20s, 1930s, 1940s. This is not new. We just don't have a particular land base to go to anymore, so it's all in your backyard and your parking lot. So I think that when we're talking about exploring our minds, you know, to open our minds to other dimensions and possibilities and, you know, other life forms that we can't see, you know, it's very tough for people. And so I'm just defending average folk out there and even poor scientists who say,
and I have no problem with them being that way. Like, and their focus isn't on finding Bigfoot right now. Absolutely. I'm with that. But I think that it's when they automatically dismiss or start mocking someone because of it, to me, now it becomes unacceptable. Like, you can argue with me that Bigfoot isn't real if you've done the research. You don't just tell me he's not real, I've never seen him. Well, yeah, that's your experience. You know, and like Dr. Edwards said, science is all about learning and investigating phenomenon. It's not meant to be established as a set of rigid rules. Closed-mindedness is contrary to what science is based on. And I absolutely agree on this. And I think, like most extremists, they have become the thing they hate. So science was created because they got tired of religion running everything. What everything was based off of religion, and if you believed anything outside of that religious belief, you were burned at the stake or buried in a bridge or, you know,
or like, what was it, Socrates? He dared to say that the gods might not exist, and he was forced to drink poison in a trial.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But I think Freud was the first to distinguish that, and that's why Freudian psychology is so popular.
Although largely discredited now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that unfortunately science has become that they have become, it is our belief system. You have to follow our rules. They have to be repeatable. Yeah. That science has become so rigid now that I think you're right, Dr. Michael, it's time for spirituality to take a little bit of a swing back and go, you know what? You're right. You know what? You need to be not so rigid in that. These are the scientific methods and you can't go outside of them. Well, why not? That was what science was based on, was to think outside of this itty bitty box that you were forced into,
I think it's like, I also consider it a bit of apples and oranges. You know, I think that when it comes to the scientific method and academics, there is an absolute value in that. And I think there's a purpose to it. I think it's a lot of times separate from the more metaphysical. It's a separate discipline.
I'd like to just point out what Dr. Micah said in the chat. It's important to distinguish between psychology as a scientific discipline and certain aspects of popular psychology or self-help literature, which might sometimes be less rigorous and evidence-based. However, the core of academic psychology is firmly grounded in scientific principles making it a legitimate scientific field. And I think what I would like to add to that is cause and effect. If a bunch of rats in a cage have been trained to be a certain way and all behave a certain way, it becomes a science. Absolutely. It has grounded principles in that. And would you, it's like, who was it, Edwards, he was the nephew of Freud. He became the first to find ways of marketing ideas, you know, and kind of propaganda to the masses. And so, what was his, I can't remember his first name, something Edwards. Anyway, so if everyone is trying to think a certain way, believe a certain way, live in a certain reality, then of course that can be its own legitimate scientific study.
Yes.
But what if some people are not, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak, and saying...
Yeah, but I think that's the thing is, you know, apart from, like, true mental illness and hoaxers and, you know, people who are truly trying to debunk you, I think that... For the most part, people really do want you to succeed. They want you to, they want to have a spiritual experience as well. They don't want you, for the most part, people don't want you to fail, at least in the communities that I've been in. They want you to be successful. They want to see you take steps forward. And I think that that's why when I had heard about the girl with the bee, like, why wouldn't you want to take that step forward? Why would you want her to notice a pattern and then you take that away? You know, yeah. Like that's, I think that that's why to be taken serious. Well, why can't I be taken serious? Isn't that what science was based on? Was we wanted to see things outside of the bubble of Earth, you know, the sun evolving around the earth. You know, we wanted to see outside of that world.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, why try to limit someone? You know, just let it go where it goes. Let's see where it leads. And if it leads nowhere, then it leads nowhere. If it leads somewhere, then we have a wonderful new basis of knowledge to operate from. Yeah. I don't know if that was a really good point or if we lost everybody else.
Yeah, no, you made me think about that.
I had my mute button on, Michael. I was going to talk. Sorry. I would only like to add that in my reality, which is different from the common reality, as I've been made well aware of, is that I can see between the worlds. And that is my reality. I had to adjust to this other three or four dimensional reality that other people have. You know, it's like I was working at the hospital today and I'm seeing a few spirits walking around. And I'm looking at people like, don't you see that? And they go, no, people are just carrying on about their business and they don't see what I see. And it's, am I believable? Well, I guess that's a really subjective kind of perception. If I say, oh, there's spirits walking around here, people look at me, they're like, I'm crazy. Or, are you taking drugs or something? And yet, you know, because it's just funny, I was gifted by a client and her daughters a t-shirt with a big alien on the front with his middle finger up. I love this t-shirt. And I had to go in for some blood work to the hospital. So I saw a lot of coworkers, and they looked at my t-shirt and they saw me in a very different light. And I thought, it's a chuckle, like nobody thought it was very funny. And I thought, wow, that's who I'm working with, you see? And it's perception. You're either open to being entertained. And in what way will you be entertained? You're open to being curious. In what way will you be curious? You know, and I think that's what we have to understand here. In the field of cryptozoology, I think that for the most part, most people want it to be shown to them in much the same way as they want you to prove you're a psychic. You know, I've had many people, mostly men, I might add, that's just an observation, who say, so you say you're psychic. I said, well, you be the judge. Sit down. I don't care. And that's always been my attitude. I don't have to prove myself. I just have to do my work, and you decide. And I'd say 99% of the time, they walk away kind of confused. and I just do what I do. And it's based on what? I don't know. I don't know what it's based on. And I came to make peace with the fact that I don't know. And when it comes to whether it's cryptozoology, psychic phenomenon, any other kind of metaphysics, I'm at peace knowing I don't know the answer. I only know that I love asking the questions. And I think that's kind of where you're at, Tabitha, if I'm not mistaken. You just love the curiosity and asking the questions. Will you come up with a final answer? Absolutely not. You're not going to be able to prove it to anybody.
I don't think there is a final answer.
What's that, Dr. Brigham?
I don't know that there is a final answer. You know, we've been talking about several different things. You know, psychology, psychiatry. You know, these are things you had mentioned in chat, the DSM-5 and things. Well, you can point to the past where homosexuality was looked at as a psychological disorder. Psychology and psychiatry are going to be constantly evolving because humans and life is constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. And, you know, I do think that there is a bit more open-mindedness than we sometimes think. And I do think that part of the problem is there's so much craziness that's thrown around that it's hard to discern what is earnest and what is somebody that has a grounded, reasonable basis for a belief that might be outside the norm, and a full-on wackadoodle that says that we're going to become zombies because of the 5G. I think there's a middle ground. Dr. Mike had talked about his experience with the scientific community not being quite so rigid, or not being rigid and being more open-minded, and I think that's going to be hit and miss. I don't think that anything is... I don't think anything is a monolithic, slab of things. I don't think there's like a science council that sits in judgment of everything. It's all a bunch of people, and they're people that are interacting differently.
In the sense of, I would say yes. Maybe when you get out in the field, sure. But I would say in colleges and universities, there is the council that sits on their chairs and will not accept it. Like, unfortunately, there is.
But you have different councils squaring off against other councils. And this council has this belief, and then they're squaring off against that other set of beliefs.
And maybe the girl who had that bee who saw that they were that the same figures in math and the different dimensions, maybe if she had been at a different university, absolutely she would have gotten, do it, test it, let's find out what it means, It could have just been at the university or college that she was at that just didn't allow her to do this,
I think there's also a lot of importance to the individual. She might have had better success if she'd come into contact with a more open-minded individual who could see the promise in it, the curiosity to be explored. And I think a lot of times that's what it comes down to is, we often think of people that we don't know, but we kind of get this feeling of people, institutions, they're this blob, but they're just people, and everybody's different. Everybody has a different perspective. So it's a random draw, but I do have a couple of questions before we wrap up, and it's gone by so fast, but is there anything else on this, kind of line of thinking that we wanted to talk about before I rudely move us on?
No, I just have this fascination with things that go bump in the night, and cryptozoology just falls right into that. And I thought, it's October. This is the month for things that go bump in the night.
It is. It is at that. That's actually a perfect segue too. Because I wanted to
31 days of horror movies.
Yeah. I've never been so much into the horror movie side, but I love I just love the vibe on Halloween. Everybody's kind of it's like tongue in cheek, fun, funny, kind of. But I did want to ask, in this field, we've talked a lot about Sasquatch and things. We kind of touched on a couple others. What are some of the most fascinating or interesting cryptids that you're most interested in?
So my favorite one is the Wendigo or the Wendigo. It depends on who you talk to, how they pronounce it. I love the mythology of that. And even there was a guy once, I think in the early 1800s, who claimed he was possessed by one. The Mothman is one of my other favorites, and his appearance. I actually don't live too far from the Beast of Bray Road. So that's one of my other favorite ones.
Dr. Zach mentioned in the chat that he doesn't live far where the Mothman myth happened.
And I also love the Flatlands Monster. That is one of the most interesting looking ones, like the way people describe what it looks like.
What is that one?
So he kind of looks like an alien mixed, like if it dressed up on Halloween like a tulip, has a red tulipy head, but it has the big eyes and stuff like an alien does. And then it has that almost like plant-like body, and that's how it moves around. Look up the Flatlands Monster. It's one of the most interesting ones. But I, like, these are all ones that I, like, people, and it's not just one person. These are cryptids that multiple people have seen and claim to have seen. And I like the unique ones. I like to think, why did they have that experience? And then the terror and the fear that you see in people's eyes when they're talking about these experiences. I love that. Like, I wish I had that one of those experiences, because I find this, the whole cryptid culture, I find it absolutely fascinating. I love watching documentaries on it.
I would only like to add as a final thing, everybody, that when it comes to some people saying they come across a cryptid, it could very well be an anomaly or an abnormality in nature. It's something that is a malformation. It's not a mermaid. It could be a malformation in some way. So I just want to add that before we close, that sometimes...
And I love that Gemma brought up the El Chupacabra. Yeah. That is my favorite name. True. I love just saying it.
It's a fun name. And I do have to blame Gemma because she mentioned Chupacabra. And now I want a Chalupa. I don't know what the connection there is, but I do want a Chalupa. But,
what's interesting is a lot of the cultures for cryptids, like a lot of the cultures do, like that they absolutely believe in these. And so it's a cultural belief. And then people outside of those cultures have experiences. And so I find this, I love this. Absolutely. I love this.
You know, I was going to say a moment ago that, you know, there's so much interest in it, and it's so fascinating. If you were even to take out, let's just say it's not true, just the very fact of the representations, these entities, these creatures, what they reflect about humanity and how they react to them, the fascination that they invoke. I think it harkens back to who we once were as a people, where there was so much that was unknown, and we've learned so much. I think it makes people want to believe that, well, if we haven't learned it yet, it probably doesn't exist, but there's so much further to go.
Yeah. Like I had said earlier, I think it's a modern mythology. As survivors and in even evolution, we want to explain the unknown. And so we fill in those. So I love cryptids. I think that's, we've created things that still go bump in the dark and in the night that we can't explain. We still have to have an explanation. We can't just let it go.
I've really, really enjoyed, I know, wow, an hour went by so fast.
Oh, it did. It did so fast.
It really did. Thank
you. Tabitha, you're always a joy to have on. Thank you very much. Awesome chat. So anybody listening in the archives, if you ever get a chance, I know I see a few new names in our chat, which I'm excited, to see. So anybody in the archives, if you ever get a chance to join us in a live program, please do. And look, we could go on forever. So we got to have you back again, Tabitha.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we can further this conversation.
You know, a little behind the scenes, there are so many great topics Tabitha, you were picking from. I think we have a lot of different source material for other conversations in the future, so we'd love to have you back.
Yeah, I love discussions with you guys. You guys have definitely become a community, and The degree following, you guys are you're like a family. I look forward to this every Wednesday.
Oh, thank you, and likewise, and you know, to everybody that joins us every week, you know, there's so many names, too many to mention, but it is a community, and that is a wonderful thing about being the human animal, is being able to come together and socialize and expand on each other's ideas and bounce off of one another, and I absolutely love it, absolutely love it. And thank you, Tabitha. Thank you for what you've done tonight. Thank you for this discussion.
And just being who you are. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. So, well, I guess it's, 10 o'clock on the dot. We've actually gone longer than we usually do. I blame Vicky. But,
of course.
I didn't even really have any good opportunities to get your blood pressure up. You know, I barely made any Canadian jokes, you know. That's did you awesome. Even say process? I don't know. But it's been a
fun
discussion.
Tabitha.
Thank you, everybody. And, so I will just say, as we are wrapping up, Tabitha, did you have any final thoughts?
Nope. Just, you know, stay squatchy.
I love it. I love it. Dr. Vicky, I don't think you can beat that, but yeah,
no,
you going to try?
No, not a bit. Stay squatchy. I'm down.
I love it. Well, thank you so much again, Tabitha. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.